This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from downtown San Luis Obispo. We're at the Network, which in a prior incarnation was the Spindle. This has been an iconic gathering spot for decades. And here we are with Dave Congleton, who's approaching his 29th anniversary of being an on-air host at KVEC.
Tom, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to come back downtown San Luis Obispo.
A lot of great memories. We were talking when we arrived about how this used to be the Spindle and the stage, and people would come here on the lunch hour and enjoy live music, and this whole patio area here would be jammed with people. But I look around. Everywhere I look downtown, there's a memory for me, because I first moved here in 1987.
And I came here 78.
Ah.
So, yeah, we both remember the good old days.
They were good old days. Glad I got to experience San Luis Obispo in the late 80s, early 90s. It's still a wonderful town, but it's also been a lot of change.
As long as I have you as a captive, prior to arriving in San Luis Obispo, what did you do? I think you were an instructor, professor.
You want the long version or the short version?
We'll do good short.
I'm a burned-out college professor. Mm-hmm. I taught in Indiana, Minnesota, Oklahoma, and Utah. I was miserable. What's funny is that next year, I will officially have spent half my life on the Central Coast.
Oh, interesting. So two lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a good way of phrasing it. Mm-hmm. My second act began in August of 1987. I came here to take a one-year non-renewable teaching position at Cal Poly. I did everything I could to make sure they would never invite me back.
What were you teaching?
Public speaking, critical thinking. As the late Roy Orbison said, if you have something to fall back on, you always will. So I didn't burn my bridge, I torched it.
How and why did you come to California from the Midwest?
I'm a burned-out college professor. I had taught in Indiana and Minnesota and Utah and Oklahoma. And by the time I was 34 years old, I realized that I was unhappy and going nowhere fast. And I realized through therapy that what I wanted was to live in California and do something creative.
What did you think you were going to do?
I wanted to be a screenwriter.
And you did that. You've been doing that.
Yeah, but that's been a long journey. I didn't have a plan. That's why when Cal Poly had a job, a one-year non-renewable teaching position, I grabbed it because I figured I can go to this place, San Luis Obispo, that I've never heard of, stay there for a year, and then get on with my life. And I left for a year, went down to Venice. I lived in Venice for a year. I did really bad stand-up comedy. I went nowhere fast. I was digging myself a ditch, so I came back.
Interesting.
And I haven't left.
What year and why and how did you start your Dave Congleton talk show?
In 1991, I was working part-time at the Telegram Tribune, and I needed additional work. Frank Sheehan, the owner of KVEC, ended up talking to my then-wife, Charlotte Alexander, saying that he needed someone in the afternoon to do a radio show because we had Betsy Nash in the morning from 10 to 12, and he wanted somebody from like 2 to 4. And Charlotte immediately thought of me because I had done some radio in high school. So I went in, I talked to Dave Cox and Frank Sheehan, and I didn't hear anything. And about a month later, they called and offered me the job. I think the reason they offered me the job is that I was the only person they could find who would work for $12,000 a year. I went in for my very first meeting with Dave Cox. He shuts the door. He says, Betsy Nash just quit. She's moving to L.A. You're going to take her place. So I went from being hired at the radio station to all of a sudden taking over for the most popular talk show host in the county.
You are one of the last men standing in radio talk shows on the Central Coast.
There are three of us. Jamie Uppenauer up in Paso Robles. Of course, Andy Caldwell and me. And, of course, the fine folks at KCBX.
So tell us about when you started your talk show, your mission statement. What did you hope it would become?
Again, I'm not a long-term planner, and I wish that I could be. My main goal was to get on the air, and it was trial by error. My first show, by all accounts, went fine. Rick Martel was my opening guest.
Oh, wow.
We got plenty of phone calls, and it was great. The very next day, I interviewed some people from the estuary out in Morro Bay, and I interviewed a woman who was a clown, and the show died. And it was a great lesson, though, because I realized that any day of the week, I can do a show as good as anything you're going to hear in the country, and other days, I'm so bad that I'm not listening, and I'm sitting there. And my main goal, Tom, has been to try to keep it local, to keep local radio alive,
right.
To give people a voice. I had a woman on the other day. She was mad at Bank of America because they've been closed for a couple weeks, and she hasn't been able to do her banking. And no one else would listen to her. And she reached out to me. I gave her 20 minutes, and she's able to call in and say, what is going on with Bank of America? I gave her a platform. Mm-hmm. So 29 years later, I'm still giving voice to people, and I'm pretty proud of that.
But you're totally dependent on the engaging presentation of the people that you have on. Individual show can die, not because of you, but because of the person.
Well, sometimes I'm not there. I'm there, but I'm not there. I'm not particularly interested in the subject. I'm not asking the right questions. I'm lower energy. Some of my better shows are when I don't have a guest, and I come up with different segments. The most popular one is Radio Survivor, where we vote. I give them six names, and I say, vote somebody off the island. Is it going to be Heidi Harmon, Dan Dow, Salute Carbajal? And they call in, and I love it. Because I want to vote Mayor Harmon off because of this. Mm-hmm. So you get at the idea of how people are feeling, but it's a different way of doing it.
Interesting.
Main challenge is I got 4 hours a day. So mainly what you're working on is just filling, getting the guests. I wish I had more time to actually think about the show, but mainly I'm just feeding the beast.
In certain respects, you are one of the only sources for local news and information.
Yeah.
The Tribune, for example, has gone so much wire service. There's so minimal, so few reporters to cover local things.
I think local media across the board has suffered. Times Press Recorder, gone. Morro Bay Sun Bulletin, gone. KSBY has cut way back. Heck, KVEC, back in the day, we had a full-fledged news department with reporters. That's all gone.
I remember at that point in time, your job was under threat, as I remember. Seems like there was a point in time where you might have been going down.
Well, the only time my job's ever been up in the air was in 2000 when we went from a locally owned radio station
exactly. To
being taken over by Clear Channel.
Yep.
And I guess there was some debate among Clear Channel about whether or not to keep local voices or just go totally syndicated.
And that was Clear Channel's model at that time
across
the country, was cutting out local and purely from an economic model.
But fortunately, they kept me, and I will say this, they owned the station for 8 years, and it was the best 8 years. They were the best. They gave me a legitimate salary. They gave me benefits. They would give me performance bonuses. The general manager would take me out to dinner. I felt like I had finally gotten into the professional radio world. I loved Clear Channel.
Coming up to today, you just alluded to you're voting people off the island and whatnot. Some of the other local issues that you are most passionate about and you want to make sure are talked about?
I'm going to answer that question in a roundabout way. If you ask me over the course of the last 29 years, what am I proudest of in terms of local issues, number one, without hesitation, is that the listeners of KVEC got John Lindsay his job back when PG&E let him go.
Oh, interesting.
They brought in some new management at PG&E, and they laid off, I want to say, 20, 25 people. John Lindsay was one of them. Tribune issued an editorial. John, sorry to see this happen. We wish you well. KVEC said, no, you are not going to get rid of John Lindsay. He is a Central Coast treasure. And so for the next 2 weeks, my listeners politely emailed and called Peter Darby, the CEO, up in San Francisco and said, hey, we're not going to yell at you. We're not going to scream at you. But do you know what's happening down here? 2 weeks later, John Lindsay got his job back.
How cool.
And the Tribune immediately hired him as a columnist. That's how John got his job there. That is the thing that I am the proudest of. In terms of the local issues I'm passionate about, it's hard to answer that question because I do 20 hours a week and we cover so many issues.
How far north and south, up and down the Central Coast, do you cover issues?
My primary area is Atascadero to Arroyo Grande. If there's something happening in DePomo, we'll go for it. Something happening in Paso Robles, obviously we'll go for it. But usually those people have to come to me.
Do you ever go across the border south? Santa Barbara County?
Well, one of the interesting shows we did is that my friend Sue Bob Davis came in, and we started talking about Santa Maria. And she thought that Santa Maria got a bad rap. And I was blown away by how many people started calling in from Santa Maria to talk about what made Santa Maria so great. I don't talk about it more because we have a sister station in Santa Maria, and I don't want to intrude on their operation. I believe that radio is best when it's local, so I just try to serve the community.
What's the biggest issue facing San Luis Obispo, right?
I think the big issue is maintaining a quality of life. Everybody wants a quality of life. The millennials, they want to be able to afford a house. The old timers that have been around here for a while, we want it to be the way that it was. We're afraid of change. And so we see the place that they're proposing on Marsh Street and Choro, and we, oh, that's not San Luis. And we have to decide what we want this city to be. And then the other part is that there is this division between the millennials and the old timers, the old San Luis Obispo, and we seem to be really divided. And that is spilled out in this mayoral election and the city council election.
Give us some examples of division between the millennials and the old timers.
You see the argument in a couple different places. One, the argument about the bike lanes out on Choro. We want people out of their cars. We want the downtown to be free of cars. We don't want to build more parking structures. And people who've lived here for a while go, well, why can't I drive my car downtown? Why do I have to live by your values? Why can't we compromise on things? We have a mayor and a city council that has taken this town so far to the left. On the show, we call it Berkeley South. And what I miss, Tom, is that there used to be a diversity of opinion on city council. You could have Christine Mulholland, but you'd also have Dodie Williams and a Dave Romero. Now all five are way to the left, and there's a loss of debate. There's no debate anymore.
Interesting.
And I find that sad.
Is there hope for a more balanced city council coming up?
Well, let's see what happens with Aubriana Torres. I'm not making any predictions, but you're going to see that diversity of Torres and Sweeney get elected. I have no idea. I don't make predictions.
Dan Dow has been in the news quite a bit lately. Do you want to talk about that? Have you had Dan Dow on your show?
I have been in touch with Dan Dow, and we expect the district attorney to join us as things calm down. I have mixed reactions about Dan. I wouldn't call us friends, but we've had a friendly professional relationship, and I have been openly critical of him on my radio show for his mixing his personal and professional life. So the other day when he was at the California Secession presentation and heard the conservative guest speaker, that was fine, but then he went home and he posted on social media what a great American she was, even though she is an open critic of Black Lives Matter. Well, here he is putting all these Black Lives Matter activists on trial. So is our district attorney biased against Black Lives Matter? I think that's a legitimate question to ask. So I wish he hadn't done that.
Hopefully he'll come on the show.
I would like to have that conversation with Dan Dow. Sheriff Parkinson and I are due for another conversation because we need his thoughts on systemic racism.
Have you talked to him about that yet?
I've talked with him privately. The thing about my show is that I'm trying not to be a gotcha guy mm-hmm. on my show. Dan Dow, get in here now and justify what you did. Hey, Sheriff Parkinson, get in here now. In the old days, I would always judge my show by the number of phone calls. I had to be controversial. I had to get the phone calls. Now, as I have been at the microphone for a few years, I'm more interested in a real conversation. And I don't necessarily care what the callers want to do. They may want to go after Sheriff Parkinson. That's not my agenda. In this last election cycle, I had all the candidates on, except Mayor Harmon wouldn't come on the show because she thinks I'm too negative. And I was often protecting my guests. Somebody tried to go after Andy Caldwell because he has some personal family issues. I cut off the caller. Not on my show.
Right.
That's not the kind of conversation I want to have. So, yes, we will talk to Dan Dow. We will talk to Sheriff Parkinson when it's appropriate.
One of the things, looking at you from the outside and listening to your show, is my sense is there's a strong drive for neutrality on your part, to not be agendaized.
Well, in my personal life, I'm a left-leaning centrist. I could sit here and talk about all the Republicans I have voted for over the years, and that would surprise some people. But I really do try to look for the best person. On my show, I go out of my way over the course of time to provide multiple points of view. So if we're going to go after Mayor Harmon on something, I want to hear from somebody who's a supporter. And so you may not hear both points of view within a particular show, but over time you will. One of the things that I bemoan, Tom, is that I can't have debates anymore. In the old days, on the morning show, we could have a conservative and a liberal debate, and then we'd all go out to lunch together. Those days are gone. It gets far too personal, too quickly. It goes from 0 to 60 in a minute, and it's like, oh, my God, what have I created here? I don't even try anymore.
That's sad.
It is. Yeah. But it's reflective of what's happening in society.
Right.
Civility is on the decrease. One has to be optimistic, but I don't know how we get there.
Yeah.
I don't know how we make that change.
So your show is all done remote. When I was on your show, I was at home on my iPhone.
I'm in the studio with Craig.
So you have engineer, you're at your little studio seat.
Yeah, I run my own board. You Casey Bex guys get it easy.
So when you do you still have call-ins regularly?
Yes.
Has that changed?
Well, it's funny. During the pandemic, March, April, May, our phones were through the roof. I had never experienced anything like that. And I knew our ratings were going to go high. And when the ratings came out, I was right because I could feel it. No matter what the topic was, people were calling in. Now it's kind of gone back to its normal levels. But I had never seen anything like last spring.
Interesting. On an average, how many call-ins do you get in a typical segment or show?
It varies. My minimum for an hour discussion is that if I'm not getting at least 3 phone calls, something's wrong. We can usually take about 7 to 8 mm-hmm. on a good discussion. When we did Guess the First Day of Rain contest with John Lindsay, we had 52 phone calls in 1 hour.
Wow.
Poor Craig. He had to answer all those calls.
Yeah.
But as my old boss, Jeff Williams, used to say, a segment with no phone calls is better than a segment with bad phone calls. And I've got that certain cadre of repeat callers. No matter what the topic, they want to call in and be heard. Okay, but they're not necessarily adding to the conversation. So I often will jump in, and I'm trying not to be rude, but the show comes first.
Right.
And I'm sorry, Joe in San Luis, we've already heard from you. You've already called in once today. Give somebody else a chance.
going forward, approaching your 29th anniversary, more of the same from Dave Congleton?
Meaning?
Meaning any shift in philosophy or direction? Or?
Well, here's the big challenge for KVEC is what's going to happen without Rush Limbaugh. We all wish anyone with stage 4 cancer well, and I am grateful to Rush Limbaugh because he gave me a career. He kept AM radio alive. No Rush Limbaugh, no Dave Congleton. So KVC management is going to have to decide probably sooner rather than later what we do next. That's going to be an interesting challenge. To me, I'm not going anywhere. I'm 67. I got a few more years. We're trying to get another movie made.
You had a movie. Tell us about you had a
Authors really, Anonymous.
Talk to us about that. That was cool.
What do you want to know about it? I could do 4 hours. don't ask me about that if you're not prepared to cancel All Things Considered.
Just give us the 60-second highlight. Why?
Well, here's the main thing. I came out here in 1987 to be a screenwriter, and I tried for 6 years, and I fell on my face. And I stopped for 13 years. And in 2005, I was convinced to give it one more try. So I wrote a script in 2005. It took 7 years to sell it and get it into production, and another 2 years for it to be released. And if you want that dream, you've got to be prepared to work for it. Because for a writer, you and I both write, it's the hardest thing I've ever done, not to write a screenplay, but to get it produced. Oh my God, it's near impossible. The odds are 1 in 5,000. For every 5,000 scripts that are written, one gets produced.
Wow.
I was the one. So now I've got another one. I wrote this in 2012. I think we're going to go into production next year. So that's 9 years. I don't have that much time left.
Interesting. All right. So to learn more about the world of Dave Congleton.
One of my creative projects, I have gone back. I used to write columns for the old Telegram Tribune. And I have a blog called DaveCongletonStories.com where I've taken some of my old writing, my better stuff, because people know me in town as the radio guy, but I came here to be a writer. And I think that's kind of gotten lost with this new wave of people. Mm-hmm. So DaveCongletonStories.com is designed to remind people of my writing. And that's been a lot of fun to revisit those stories.
Very, very cool. And for those who might not listen to your show,
KVEC 920 AM, 96.5 FM, weekday afternoons from 3:05 to 7 o'clock. Listen online at 920kvec.com. And we podcast commercial free.
Excellent. So you can download the shows. Dave Congleton, as always, thank you for sharing.
Tom Wilmer, thank you, sir.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of downtown San Luis Obispo, across from the Mission, where we've been speaking with local icon David Congleton.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.